Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC Radio and WNYC.org. I'm Andrea Bernstein, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Yesterday, the Office of the Inspector General released its report on the illegal hiring practices of the Department of Justice. Remember the controversial firings of 9 U.S. attorneys last year? This report concludes that there was political bias within the Justice Department, and it extended all the way down to the summer law interns. Eric Lischblau is here to explain. He covered the story for The New York Times, and he's also the author of the book Bush's Law, The Remaking of American Justice. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. So news articles have been calling this report blistering and scathing, but are you shocked?
Well, I am surprised at the depth of the problem. We certainly had glimmers of this in the middle of the U.S. attorney scandal over the firings last year. But to see the scope of it and the detail was pretty revealing, I thought, just how systematic the process of really weeding out leftists, in the word of one of the screeners, had become in the Justice Department, particularly in the period around 2006, when soon after Alberto Gonzalez took over as Attorney General.
Give us a little bit more detail about how this screening occurred.
Sure. The way the process had worked for years was that basically career professionals, career lawyers in different parts of the Justice Department, the Civil Rights Division, antitrust, would pick their own, make their own recommendations and pick their own people for very prestigious elite programs. These are entry-level lawyers and summer interns who basically are the next generation of top Justice Department officials. You get in the door through that program, and often you rise up through the ranks. What happened beginning in 2002 under then Attorney General John Ashcroft was that process of screening out these people was handed over to top political officials who could basically say yay or nay whether someone would get in the door. And as the Inspector General found in the report yesterday, the numbers of rejected liberals, people who were seen as having Democratic affiliations or membership in groups like the American Constitution Society or Greenpeace or Planned Parenthood, the rejections for those people skyrocketed. And the acceptance of people seen with conservative credentials, being a member of the Republican Party, being a member of the Federalist Society, the acceptance of those people also skyrocketed. And this really hit a peak in around 2006, as I said, under Gonzalez, when there was essentially a litmus test. Working for Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton would get you a black mark. Working for Greenpeace, the screeners were literally Googling applicants to see what they had written on their in their law review journals, and found things like papers on minority discrimination or gender discrimination, or in one case even a My Page, someone's MySpace page that included an unflattering cartoon of President Bush. Those were all things that would get you rejected.
I understand even the Nature Conservancy was on the list, which, unlike say Greenpeace, is not necessarily known as a particularly activist group. It's a group that buys up land to preserve it for future generations.
Right. There was an almost odd definition of what constituted liberal groups, but it was a pretty broad one.
It might be hard for people to sort of, you know, if you don't think about it, I mean, everybody understands that the attorney general is a political appointee, but it's a little bit unclear, perhaps, as you go down the ranks, what the difference is between a political and a career job. Can you explain sort of, you know, at what point
Sure.
there's a career job and at what point you, you
Sure,
know.
That's an important distinction that, as you say, may be lost on your listeners. The top echelon of the Justice Department and most federal agencies, for that matter, are political appointees who change with the president in power. Those are jobs that are allowed to consider political or ideological factors in deciding who is going to set policy for the Justice Department. They make up a very small percentage of the entire department, though. The rank and file, the people who are bringing cases, who are bringing civil lawsuits, who are bringing criminal cases, antitrust, civil rights, et cetera, by and large, those are career, nonpartisan lawyers and by civil service law, you are not allowed, the Justice Department is not allowed to consider political or ideological factors in picking those spots. It's a crime under civil service law to do so.
Now explain a little bit, sort of, you know, you were talking about this as sort of a prestigious elite program. What kind of qualifications do you have to get into these programs out of law school?
Well, historically, these have been the best and the brightest. These are jobs that hundreds and hundreds of the top law school graduates apply for, from Harvard Law, from Harvard Law School, from Yale, from Stanford, from Berkeley. And there was a feeling, I think, when Attorney General Ashcroft and his staff changed the program in 2002, that it was drawing too many of the elite law schools, and elite came to be a euphemism for kind of liberal. And they wanted to diversify that. The diversification meant going to other generally less prestigious law schools, just looking at the standards and calibers of those law schools and dipping farther down into the ranks of where you stood in your class and as we said, looking at other political affiliations too.
So does that mean that there are people working in the Justice Department today who are less qualified? I mean, has it sort of dumbed down the employees in the Justice Department?
The Inspector General report didn't say that outright, but that is certainly the implication. I don't know that there's any other way to take it. They examined case after case in detail in this report, almost deconstructing the selection process, in which they found that candidates who were clearly more qualified went to better law schools, had higher grades, had better clerkships with federal judges, were passed over for candidates with more conservative credentials who went to less prestigious law schools, had lesser grades, and did not have the clerkships and the experience to justify their selection. So it's tough to avoid that inference.
Let's take some calls. This is Andrea Bernstein sitting in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC AM and FM and WNYC.org. Our call-in number, and it's new for those of you who may have it on your speed dial, is 646-778-3729, 646-778-3729. And let's go to Eric from Manhattan. Good morning, Eric. You're on with another Eric, Eric Lischbau of the New York Times.
Morning.
Good morning.
I just don't see what the big deal is. I mean, if the president is conservative and his attorney general is conservative, doesn't he have the prerogative to appoint whoever he wants to serve under him? And wouldn't a more liberal president appoint more liberal appointees?
The short answer is no. He does not have that right under civil service law. He has the right to do so with political appointees, with the attorney general, with the assistant attorney generals, those making policy. But that's a small fraction of all the employees. The rank and file, the career nonpartisan employees are not supposed to be hired based on ideology. It's
well,
a violation of civil service law.
But that might be an objective opinion. They may think they're more qualified if they maybe served with the Federal Society or whatever the more conservative groups are. I don't know. I'm not familiar with it. But they may think that that is maybe a more intelligent person. So, I know what you're saying, but sometimes I think that you can have objectivity or subjectivity, and whoever's the boss can pick whom he wants to work for him.
Well, I mean, what you're saying there runs counter to the Justice Department's position today and as reaffirmed by the current Attorney General, Casey, who said categorically yesterday after this report came out that politics and ideology should not be a factor in determining who gets hired into these career lawyer positions.
Thank you, Eric, for calling. And once again, the call-in number is 646-778-3729. Eric Lischbau of the New York Times. It gets complicated, though, doesn't it? Because obviously, if you are the elected president and you appoint John Ashcroft or Alberto Gonzalez to be your attorney general, you want that person to take the Justice Department in a certain direction consistent with what you see as your electoral mandate. And there are people out there that I'm sure want Barack Obama to be president. There are people who want John McCain to be president, and they have ideas about where the Justice Department should go. Couldn't it be argued that you can create a more cohesive unit with a sense of mission if you have a group of people who believe in what you're doing?
Well, I think that was essentially the argument of the small group of screeners, these political appointees who believed that they needed to fill the department with like-minded people from the lower levels on up, and that in their view meant people who shared their views about strict interpretations of the Constitution, for instance, versus judicial activism, the things that they saw as buzzwords versus positive attributes. The problem was that in the view of the Inspector General, and it's widely shared, that was against the law.
One of the things that is interesting about this report, and that also came out with the scandal about the firings of the U.S. attorneys, was how much was entrusted to very young people that were just out of law school. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of the people who were making these decisions on hiring and firings were people in some cases, their late 20s and early 30s. These were not kind of the old graybeards here who had been around for years and years. These were people with relatively little experience. Kind of the classic case of that people may remember from the U.S. attorney scandal last year was Monica Goodling, who was a young woman in, I believe, around 30 years old, who in the course of just a couple of years had amassed really incredible amount of power to influence policy. And these were people seen as, in the words of Gonzalez's chief of staff, seen as loyal Bushies who were able to really exert incredible influence over the entire Justice Department.
They were young, but the report certainly found that they were empowered by their higher-ups to do this, that there wasn't anybody that said stop or you're doing something wrong here.
Just the opposite. The report found that there were higher-ups who were aware of these problems, and aware of these problems because there were really strong protests from people throughout the Justice Department. That's another interesting facet of this, is that there were senior officials within the Justice Department saying, what is going on here? These decisions you're making in rejecting really qualified applicants, Stanford Law School cum laude graduates are, in the, one official described it as either irrational at best or political at worst.
Stanford is that well-known hotbed of liberalism.
Right. And despite those protests, you had even more senior officials who, according to the report, turned a blind eye to these problems.
All right, let's bring into this conversation, Eric, stay with us, but let's bring in David Latt, who is from Above the Law, which is an online legal tabloid. And we're also speaking to Eric Lischbau from the New York Times. David Latt, you are a former AUSA, Assistant U.S. Attorney yourself, and are in conversation with lots of people who are in the Justice Department community. What are you hearing about this report? Are people surprised? Do people feel vindicated? Do people feel angry at the Inspector General?
I think that largely people are surprised by this, as Eric was alluding to earlier, at the extent to which the hiring was politicized. There is a minority of people, I think, who have the view of the caller, Eric, who suggests that it's the president's prerogative to hire like-minded people. But I think that for the most part, people within the legal community who understand the distinction between political versus career hires are quite upset about the findings of the report.
Do people feel, I mean, I know that AUSAs that I know feel very, very serious about their nonpartisan and fair mission. I mean, do you think that this is something that has strayed beyond the Justice Department? Is it in individual U.S. attorney's offices around the country?
I don't think this is, again, just I haven't done any kind of study.
You haven't heard it.
But I have not, I'm not aware of that. I was a career AUSA in New Jersey, and even though the U.S. attorney is a political hire, as we learned to some extent with the U.S. attorney's controversy, the people below that U.S. attorney are career officials, and I know that my colleagues in the U.S. attorney's office had very different political views, and people would be arguing at the lunch table over politics. So I don't, at least in certain, as far as I know, it hasn't quite spread to the lower tiers of U.S. Attorney's Office is in terms of below the rank of the U.S. Attorney and maybe the front office, but it does appear that over at Maine Justice with the Honors Program, according to the report, that political considerations were taken into account.
How about you, Eric? Have you heard anything about the individual U.S. Attorney's offices?
Well, the report does talk about a relatively small number of these honors program and summer interns who were hired into U.S. attorney's offices. So it was not the majority what were at the main Justice Department, people working in Washington, but there were some also out in the field, out in the U.S. attorney's offices as well.
Let's take another caller. Ellen from Brooklyn, you are on WNYC on the Brian Lehrer Show. Good morning.
Thank you. Eric, you have said that this is a violation of civil service law, which implies that a crime has been committed. If so, how can this crime be imputed to a particular individual or a group? And can there be charges brought against such people?
Thanks for your question, Ellen.
Sure. This gets complicated. Because it's civil service law, it is considered a civil violation. It is considered illegal, and the Inspector General uses that word. But there is not a criminal statute by which the offenders could be prosecuted and could be charged and prosecuted and convicted. The report certainly lays the blame for this principally at the feet of two officials who were on the screening committee. My best understanding is that someone who believes they were discriminated against based on their political views, someone, a Stanford law graduate or Harvard law graduate who believes they were turned down because of the ideology, could sue civilly under civil service law, under violation of civil service law, but that the offenders, in this case principally these two people, could not be prosecuted criminally, and nor could they be disciplined internally because both of them have left the department. One of them, Michael Elston, was a senior official who was the chief of staff to the Deputy Attorney General. He left under a cloud in the middle of the U.S. Attorney's schedule. He was kind of at the center of that because he was accused of essentially bullying some of the fired U.S. attorneys into keeping quiet about what had happened. The second woman is a much lesser-known attorney. Interestingly, she resigned from the Justice Department the day before she was supposed to be interviewed by the Inspector General. So she was sort of off limits to them. And
so
her attorney
sort of
said, well, she's no longer at the department. You can't talk to her.
Counterintuitive that you can work at the Justice Department and commit a crime, and there can be no legal recourse for those who feel you committed a crime. We do need to wrap up this segment, Eric, but this is only the first phase, right? There are four phases in this report, so what's next?
Right. Well, the big one, obviously, still out there is the question about the firings of the U.S. attorneys themselves. I mean, that's what set off this whole scandal more than a year ago, and that's what led to the resignation of Alberto Gonzalez as Attorney General. The Inspector General and the Office of Professional Responsibility are both looking at the firings themselves of those now nine U.S. attorneys. So that will be a big report once that's done. And there are other aspects as well. They're also looking at, in particular, the alleged politicization of the Civil Rights Division, which had really become a hotbed of dissent. There were a lot of people who left the Civil Rights Division because they felt that their mission had been undermined there. So we've got at least a couple of reports still waiting to be completed.
Many chapters to unfold. Thank you, Eric Lischbau of the New York Times, the
Thanks
reporter,
for having me.
And an author of Bush's Law, The Remaking of American Justice. Thanks to David Latt, the blogger of Above the Law. Thanks to everyone who called. I'm Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. This conversation continues on our comments page. So go to WNYC.org and click on the Brian Lehrer Show.